Bram Weinstein talks sports later today from 3 to 6. Now back to Tony Kornheiser on ESPN 630, the sports capital.
Tony's back tomorrow. Andy Polin here. Fred Burton is a D.C. area native. He went to Bethesda Chevy Chase High School with me, as a matter of fact. Lives in Austin now, and for the purposes of this discussion, more importantly, is the executive director of the Ontic Center for Protective Intelligence. He's an expert on national security. We've had him on from time to time, including when we had the riot at the Capitol a couple of months ago. And he has written an article which is related to the return of sports and the return of fans after the pandemic. It's good to talk to you again, Fred. How you doing?
I'm doing just fine, Andy. Thank you for having me.
Good to have you. So what have we learned while we've had no fans in the stands and people who are in businesses like yours have had a chance to look at the way arenas are set up and how fans are secured and so forth and so forth and so on, so that when they do return, they'll be safer than ever?
You know, Andy, you raise a very interesting question, because what we're seeing is a dramatic increase in the threat landscape. Look, the complexity of the world today, with not only the rising extremism like we saw on the January 6th attack at the Capitol, but all the social and racial justice issues, just combined with the geopolitics of the world today, place us in a very unique kind of threat landscape. And now all of a sudden you're going to open up events in large stadiums and so forth. And let's be honest here, the athletes are the center of gravity to all of these special events, which places them in a very unique kind of threat window.
So what happens now? What has changed when fans get back in the stands in April of 2021 versus when there were no fans and no games, as a matter of fact, in April 2020?
Well, what you're going to see is, of course, with COVID and the pandemic, you're going to have reduced crowds in some locations. So obviously you'll have your typical physical security kind of apparatus in place, your hand wands, your see-through bags, perhaps metal detectors, perhaps even temperature checks as you enter into the stadium. But in essence, the vulnerability there is literally what you don't see, meaning there's a lot of things that take place in the threat landscape, Andy, that moves behind the scenes, that's keeping track of stalkers and fixated personalities and individuals that pose a protective intelligence concern, not only to those star athletes, but to the actual venues themselves.
Mm-hmm. Such as? What kind of things are those?
Well, for example, you'll have individuals that are fixated on, let's say, a star NFL quarterback that might follow that individual around, do some deep dives on social media, in essence doing the digital stalking of individuals, driving by houses. Those are the kinds of behaviors that in my previous life when I was a State Department special agent is something that we look for as individuals pose those kinds of risks to cabinet-level officials.
You know, we're, almost 14 years removed from the Sean Taylor tragedy, in which the burglars who had been to his home in the past thought he was with the team when they were playing in Tampa and not at his home in Miami, when they broke in and he was injured and, in fact, was home and then surprised them and they shot him. He was in a non-gated community. The people knew where he lived. He chose to live that way. Most athletes do live in gated communities now, but we know where the houses are, you know, where you see the houses on sale on the internet and the pictures of what the houses look like in some cases. I mean, how do you combat that, and how do you make these athletes safer in those kind of situations?
Well, in essence, Andy, you need a holistic kind of overview of the entire security posture. And let's not forget the recent incident affecting Joe Montana, which I wrote about in my recent article as well, mm-hmm. where he physically had an intruder in the house attempting to kidnap his granddaughter in California. So these kinds of tragedies do occur, and it's been my experience from just discussions with a lot of high net worth individuals and billionaires over the years is they think about certain things, but they really don't look at it holistically and try to imagine from the eyes of the stalker, how would you go about looking at individuals? So there's some real intelligence gaps, Andy, in in that. And let's face it, from a psychological perspective, most people really don't want to think that there's individuals out there that can do you harm. Mm-hmm. But as you so aptly recapped with the Sean Taylor incident and in the Joe Montana event, these kinds of personalities do exist out there.
Talking to Fred Burton, he is an expert on national security, the executive director of the ONTIC Center for Protective Intelligence. I relayed this story a number of times that when I went to the Super Bowl after 9/11, which would have been in 2002 in New Orleans, there was a ring of tanks around the stadium, and you saw a shift in security since then. With what's happened at the Capitol, where, you know, that's a public building where people have felt secure, how have things changed in just the couple of months since then and how people look at security?
That's really a good question, Andy, because you take the U.S. Capitol, which is a high-value target. You know, look, that was not a collection failure. That was not an intelligence, tactical intelligence collection failure. That was an analysis failure, meaning not making sense of all the different nuggets of intelligence of pending disaster. And if you look at any kind of typical stadium, whether it be an RFK kind of venue or a Dallas Jerry Jones kind of stadium, you know, those are also high-value targets. And so when you look at this from just the threat landscape, you have to look at it in that context as well. So, you know, special events for Super Bowls are unique. It was kind of like when I was at the Olympics in Atlanta. You know, everything was fine on the Georgia Tech campus until the bomb went off mm-hmm. outside of our perimeter. So those are the kinds of problems that you have to start thinking about when you start looking at large-scale special event management.
And what do you think of what's happening with the Olympics now? Do you think not just, you know, the security aspect, but the safety aspect because of COVID and so forth, do you think that it can go on and they can hold it with the way things are set up?
I really do. And, of course, you know, you look back on the horrific events in 1972 in Munich, mm-hmm. You know, involving the group Black September, which I've studied for probably 40 years now. That changed Olympic security forever. And my old organization, the State Department Diplomatic Security Service, literally helps manage these global events years ahead of time. So I'm less concerned, for example, concerning events in Tokyo, because I know that from the national security and intelligence management aspect, that those things are really, really locked down, Andy. It's these other smaller kind of events, which are still, I mean, think in general of how many baseball games are played and how many football games and how many college games are played. It's almost at times impossible to stay in front of all the different threats that are coming at you, you know, without the ability to have technology help you manage those threats behind the scenes.
Are teams hiring security teams to do this? I know there's, you know, general security, especially with leagues and so forth, but I mean, is this a new industry for teams to have, like, their own security teams to look out for their fans?
I have seen this grow over the years. For example, big NFL does have a comprehensive security program in place, but in essence, some of your teams might hire their own security manager. Sometimes where you see those gaps exist is in the athletes, because there's so many of them. Mm-hmm. So it really varies, and it's really kind of hit and miss, Andy, all across the country.
Yeah. Fred Burton is the executive director for the ONTIC Center for Protective Intelligence. If people want to access your article, how do they do that?
Well, they can visit our website, which is www.ontic.ai, and we have a tremendous amount of material on there on all things security.
It's good to talk to you when we don't have a disaster to talk about. I hope to talk to you soon, but I hope it's on good things.
Well, me too. And how's your dad doing before we go?
All good. Beat COVID, back home, and everything's fine.
Awesome. Well, God bless him, Andy.
Good to talk to you. Thank you, Fred.
Take care.